You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
You're tuned into The Wire, 1 hour of current affairs and analysis starting now.
Tēnā koutou katoa, ko Jessica toku ingoa, no mai haere mai ki te Wire mō tēnei rā. Kia ora and welcome to The Wire for Rapa Wednesday. I'm your host, Jessica, and I'll be with you for the next hour. Whai Akine coming up on the show. For our regular catch-up, I speak to Green Party co-leader James Shaw about the election results, what a new government could mean for the climate, and the ACT Party's calls for a referendum on Te Tiriti. And Otto speaks to Matthew from Students for Fair Rent, a student-led organisation campaigning to lower accommodation costs at the University of Auckland. I'm also joined in the studio by producer Arno. Arno, what have you got for us today?
I have a special on recent data released by Stats NZ about food prices, and I speak to James Mitchell, manager of consumer price delivery at Stats NZ about it. I also speak to Jeremy Neve of the Wellington City Mission about their social supermarket project and how prices have affected it. And then I speak to Surf Life Savings NZ CEO Steve Fisher to get some tips on how to stay safe at the beach this summer.
He aha o whakaro. I would love to hear your thoughts on any of our pieces today, so get in touch, tuku patuhi mai, text in on 5395 or give us a call in the studio on 09309 3879. Ka oa e wariwari e ahe ana koutou te whakarongo ki ene kororo. Ano he paki hiri roki roki maoranga I te pai tuku tuku o irirangi poho. Mi haere ki 95BFM I rakati.com. Catch all these stories and more by podcast on the 95BFM website, 95BFM.com.
It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
For our first post-election catch-up, I asked Green Party co-leader James Shaw for his thoughts on the election results, what the incoming government could mean for climate action progress in Aotearoa, and the ACT Party's calls for a referendum on Te Tiriti, and what the implications of this would be in his opinion. Here is that interview. Last time I spoke to you was before the election. While the Greens are in opposition this time around, we saw that 3 seats were won by Green MPs and that the Green Party vote was at the second highest of all time. What do you think this has indicated about what voters want to see in Parliament?
I think at this election it was really clear that the public supported much of what we were standing for. I mean, we know, for example, that the proposed wealth tax and reducing taxes for 95% of New Zealanders, providing free dental for everyone, renters' rights, those things were popular even well beyond the Green Party's support base. So I do think that people kind of credited us with that, and we helped to shape the narrative of the campaign.
Despite this, we saw that Labor did lose a significant amount of seats. Why do you think the Progressive Bloc fell short this election?
It actually wasn't a complete wipeout in of the Progressive Bloc. I mean, the Māori Party increased their vote share and the number of seats that they hold. With the Greens, obviously increased ours and had a very successful election in that sense. Labor obviously did lose a number of seats, but if you look at the right wing vote, it's kind of not much north of 50%, and actually the National Party only won marginally more votes this time than Jacinda Ardern did in 2017. So not even clearing 40%. So I don't think that it's as kind of tectonic a shift as some people are making out, and I do hope that the new government kind of considers that and actually tries to govern on behalf of the many, not the few who funded them.
What are your priorities in opposition going to be?
Well, at one level, they have not changed, right? So action on climate change, protecting our native wildernesses and wildlife, and on building a fairer society. Those are the priorities that we stood on in the campaign. We have stood for a very long time. We will continue to put pressure on the government to continue on that track as well. We have yet to kind of develop our full strategy. I mean, it's only been a week and a half, and our new MPs haven't been sworn in yet, and they're still getting their kind of feet under the table. So, we'll take the remaining months of this year to develop our full strategy for opposition.
As the Green Party, one of your priorities has been and is going to be the climate. In your opinion, what could a National Act, or depending on special votes, potentially National Act, New Zealand First coalition, mean for climate action in Aotearoa?
Well, I mean, I said this very frequently during the course of the election campaign, that I'm very, very worried about what the ACT Party was saying about climate change and what New Zealand First were also saying about it, you know, spreading misinformation and so on. So I do think that it is concerning the level of influence that those parties may have over the next government. So I guess because we don't know yet what it's going to look like, it's hard for me to comment on specifics.
The new government has expressed that they would look into bringing back new offshore oil and gas exploration. Why is this something that you would advise against?
Well, I just think it's bonkers. I mean, we know that we cannot burn 80% of the reserves that we already have around the world if we're to have any hope of halting the temperature increase to 1.5 degrees. And we're already seeing the impacts of that with, you know, Cyclone Gabrielle, the floods in Auckland and so on. So I think it's the height of irresponsibility to say in the middle of a climate crisis that you're going to expand fossil fuel production.
The new government has expressed concern about our economy. What argument would you make for climate action being an economical decision?
Well, actually, action on climate change is good for the economy. It's actually better for the economy than not taking action on climate change, you know, given the massive costs involved in the cleanups after those anniversary day floods in Auckland and Cyclone Gabrielle a couple of weeks later. If you take, for example, solar power, it's the cheapest form of energy ever created by the human race. And so the more solar that you roll out, the cheaper electricity becomes. The more businesses are able to reduce those costs. It reduces inflation. It helps householders out with their household energy bills and so on. So, you know, the idea that, you know, we should stick with fossil fuels, the cost of which is going up, when you've got renewable clean alternatives, the cost of which is going down, is economic vandalism in my view.
Do you have any concerns about any particular legislative progress or climate action progress that we've made over the past few years being taken away?
Well, it's all at risk, but ultimately we just don't know what the new government is going to do or what it looks like, so we're just going to have to wait and see.
And you've been climate minister for a number of years. What will your approach be to working with the new government? Will your door be open to the new climate minister if they want to collaborate?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that as a country, we cannot afford to have these massive swings in climate change policy every time the government changes. The whole approach that I took as climate change minister over the last 6 years was to try and build parliamentary consensus, bipartisan consensus on the overall direction. And so anything that I can do to try and help to maintain that, I will do.
And lastly, we've seen that ACT have called for a referendum on Te Tiriti, and they've said that this is one of their bottom lines for negotiations. What is the Green stance on ACT wanting the general public to redefine the principles of the treaty?
We're appalled. We think it's dangerous and divisive and could lead to social unrest.
What specific implications do you think a referendum of this nature would have?
Well, you can just look at Australia, who have just had a referendum on a very minor measure to provide the Indigenous people of Australia with the ability to essentially advise Parliament on how policy affects Aboriginal Australians. And that was defeated by essentially a very heavily kind of, you know, and very divisive campaign against it. And I can see the same thing happening here. Any time that you decide the rights of a minority through a referendum in which the majority gets to determine the rights of the minority, the minority loses, right? And you know, I think it would set race relations back decades, and I think it would be hugely divisive.
That was Green Party co-leader James Shaw discussing the election results and potential plans of the incoming government.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party.
The Wire.
Irirangi Pō, Radio Bosom.
The Wire.
And we'll be right back after this short break. Let us know your thoughts on any of our pieces today. Text in on 5395.
Well, she tossed all night like a raging sea, woke up and climbed from a suicide machine. With her Spanish candles and her Persian poles, stuck on the rocks inside Opus 40 stone. Scratching her wrists in the pouring rain, she collapses down upon the ocean floor. Again. Tears in waves, minds on fire. Lights alone by your side. Catskill man. I'm alive, she cried, but I don't know what it means. But somewhere out there across the moonlit sands, there's a line drawn like the lines on her own hand. And slamming her eyes, locking the door, collapses down upon the ocean floor. Again. Tears in waves, minds on fire. Nights alone by your side.
The nominees for the Student Radio Network Awards are out.
Te tohu kohinga, Mariu.
Favourite album brought to you by APRA AMCOS NZ. Alphabet Head and Young Ghost. Bad Taste 2. Clementine Valentine. The Coin That Broke the Fountain Floor. Deep State. Dreams. IE Crazy. Country Justice. Office Dog. Spiel. Ripship. Fearsome Engine. Soft Plastics. Saturn Return. Vera Allen. Ideal Home Noise. Violet Hurst, Donegal. Womb, dreaming of the future again.
He tohu kahurangi e kawea mai kia koutou nga te reo reka o Aotearoa.
Outstanding Achievement Award brought to you by NZ Music Commission.
And on the night to find out.
Don't miss the Student Radio Network Awards 2023. Saturday, November 4th, 7pm. Listen live on air or watch on the SRN YouTube page.
Return to the Nest this summer for New Zealand's leading independent music festival.
95BFM presents Nest Fest January 5th and 6th at Tomoana Showgrounds.
Jam-packed with a truly magical lineup of world-class acts featuring
The Exponents,
Genesis Owusu,
Catch a Fire,
Lady Six,
Leisure,
Marsilius Pittman,
Promised Land,
Suo,
Malice K, and more.
95BFM presents Nest Fest January 5th till 6th at Tomoana Showgrounds in the stunning Hawke's Bay. Get your tickets now from nestfest.co.nz.
Mixtape was sad. She saw shows with specific themes and thought, who am I? Then one day she realised that she'd been lovingly crafted by her father Sam for a greater purpose.
To guide people into their weekend
the right way.
She would fulfil her mission, no matter the cost.
Start your weekend right with the Saturday Mixtape. Expect the latest drops, the deepest cuts, and everything in between. The Saturday Mixtape with your host, Sam. Saturdays 9 to 11am, right here on 95BFM.
It's fucked.
Yeah, it is.
The Wire.
Welcome back to The Wire on 95BFM. Let us know your thoughts on any of these pieces today. Text in on 5395. Statistics New Zealand regularly conducts food price surveys, which include supermarket groceries, takeaways, and restaurants. The information is sorted by food groups. Recent data shows that the price of fruit and vegetables may finally be stabilizing relative to inflation, although the price is still higher than this time last year. To find out more, I spoke to James Mitchell, manager of consumer price delivery at Stats NZ. I started our interview by asking what range of time the data collected covered.
So we recently released our September month food price index, so that covered the September month, but also looks at the September 2023 month versus the same time a year ago. And last week we also published our general inflation figures that covered the September quarter as well.
Did some food groups contribute to the price increase more than others?
Yes, yeah, so in the September month, we actually saw food prices fall. Fruit and vegetable prices were the main drivers behind that. But when you still compared annually, we still saw the prices increase quite a bit. And that was your grocery foods, sort of think your middle aisles of a supermarket, your lollies, eggs, chips, they were behind that increase.
Did the price of restaurant meals increase as well, and if so, by how much?
Yeah, so dining out at restaurants and cafes or getting takeaways, the price of that's been rising steadily. So if you're sitting down for a meal, you're looking at about 8% more than it was this time last year, and going to get a coffee and scone or a takeaway meal will set you back an extra 9%.
Now, you mentioned the price had decreased. Was that the overall price that decreased or the rate of increase that has flattened?
So we actually saw the prices in September fall. It was a small fall, but a fall nonetheless. It was pretty much just the fruit and veg prices doing that. We saw some increases in some other food groups, but some of the largest food groups like the grocery and meat, they were pretty flat. Well, they were flat in September.
Is the cost decrease in line with inflation, or is it beyond that?
So if we look at the September quarter, which is where we can make that comparison. So inflation in the September quarter was 1.8%, and food in that quarter actually increased 0.9%. So over those 3 months, that was about 8% of inflation. But if we look at the annual picture again, where we saw 5.6% in overall price increases, food was still up nearly 9% for the year, and that was about 30% of that inflation. So we are starting to see smaller price rises in recent months. It's sort of moderating a bit.
How does the changing cost of food compare with countries overseas?
So we're currently sitting at about the same level as Australia, so around that the high 8-9%. There are other countries which are doing a bit worse than we are, a bit better. You know, high prices increases, lower price increases. But yeah, we're about the same as Australia.
Besides fruit and vegetables, are there any other food groups that saw a decrease in price relative to inflation?
Not in the most recent months, but over the last few months, we have seen meats and grocery foods also fall. Same with non-alcoholic beverages. But longer term, every food group is high and more expensive than it was this time last year. But only fruit and vegetables have been increasing at a lower rate than overall inflation.
How does Stats NZ gather data about food prices?
So we collect data in a couple of different ways. So one of our main ways we collect data, we have pricing offices located around the whole country, and they'll go into all sorts of different food stores, such as greengrocers, butchers, restaurants, cafes. They take the prices of different products in those stores and send them back to us here in Wellington. And we also get data directly from the supermarkets too to round out that picture.
Finally, are there any positives to our economy with the increase in food prices, or is it all negative?
So I'm sure we're all sort of feeling the squeeze with those increases in food prices. In general, though, there is some, you know, a small level of price increases, which is seen as healthy to try and make sure that people continue to want to buy now rather than hold off their purchases, and that discourages businesses from putting out new products or growing new produce. So, yeah, it is light at the moment, but generally a small level is considered healthy. From next month, we're going to be releasing some more monthly statistics on prices. So we're going to be adding in monthly petrol and diesel prices, airfares, so cost of going home to go visit family, accommodation, so your holidays, as well as our non-alcoholic beverages and cigarettes group as well. So that's going to be in addition to the food and the rental prices we currently do monthly.
Next, I spoke to Jeremy Neve, who works at the Wellington City Mission, particularly the Social Supermarket, a new project aimed at replacing the traditional food bank model. I started our interview by asking him what they do. Here is that piece now.
Okay, so we run a social supermarket. We no longer run a food bank. And the fundamental difference is people come into an area that's set up like a small supermarket. They get given a points value and they get what they want, so they help themselves to what we have. Rather than us giving them what we have, they get to choose.
The price of fruit and veggies dropped in September relative to inflation. However, the overall price is still higher than September of last year. Have you seen an increase or a decrease in food prices?
There's been an increase generally. Yeah, we notice that we're buying in vegetables weekly. And we've definitely noticed an increase in price.
How about other grocery items?
Yes, it's just a general trend upwards. It's not dropping, but yeah, general trend up.
Are you seeing an increase or a decrease in the amount of donated food items over the past year?
City Mission's been around for coming up 125 years, so we have a very strong donor base who donate goods to us every week. So yes, we are, and some corporates who support us are donating more, which is fantastic.
Are you seeing an increase or decrease in the number of people coming in for food over the past year?
Definite increase in the number of people coming through, definitely.
Do you think that's related to the increased cost of living?
It definitely plays a part in the increase. And we see a lot of people who are just getting caught with one-off bills that happen and only come to us once and we never see them again because they just have a shortage in any given week that we help them meet with groceries.
Do you have any thoughts on the incoming national government in providing more food for less privileged people?
Until we know what their policies are and how they're going to handle it, we're not really sure.
What do you recommend people who are struggling to feed themselves do?
We offer all sorts of assistance around the people who shop in our social supermarket. So we have financial mentors that can meet with them, social workers who can also assist if there's other areas in their lives that we can help them out with to make that money go a little bit further.
What kinds of food items do food banks prefer the public donate to them?
All the staples, you know, tinned items of all sorts. So pastas, sauces, yeah, you name it, we'll take it.
That was James Mitchell of Stats NZ and Jeremy Neve of the Wellington City Mission on the changing price of food and groceries and how it's affecting consumers.
Why should New Zealanders care so much about this?
Because your children will curse you if you don't.
The Wire.
This week is Intersex Awareness Week, and tomorrow is Intersex Awareness Day in Aotearoa. I spoke to Communications and Community Manager for Intersex Aotearoa, Jelly O'Shea, about what it can mean to be intersex and what they are doing to celebrate and raise awareness about variations in sex characteristics. I started off our interview asking O'Shea about the origins of Intersex Awareness Week.
The origin of Intersex Awareness Day actually commemorates a day in 1996 in Boston where a bunch of intersex activists gathered outside the American Pediatric Conference and talked about their own painful experiences, and I guess was a global example of people coming out from isolation, shame and secrecy and standing as they are in their true beautiful intersex selves and demanding better. And so that's inspired a global movement. So we celebrate the 26th of October in remembrance of that day. And I guess like a lot of other marginalised communities, we balance the protest with celebration. And so we're also talking about not just, you know, the changes that we deserve and need to see, but also just how amazing it is being part of this beautiful, diverse community and being proud of our bodies and our experiences.
For those listening who might not know, can you tell us a bit about what it can mean to be intersex?
Yeah, totally. So intersex is an umbrella term, so by that it's like sort of a capturing term for all these different ways that bodies can naturally develop in the womb and also through puberty and later in life. So there's up to 40 different variations that we know of, and we call them variations of sex characteristics. So we all have sex characteristics. We have primary sex characteristics and secondary sex characteristics. Primary is talking about your chromosomes, your hormones, your internal and external anatomy, so all that reproductive good stuff. And then secondary is everything from like where hair grows on your body and sort of like those processes we associate typically with puberty, things that change around that time. So someone with a variation in sex characteristics means that yet primary and secondary sex characteristics may present differently to what is expected for male and female bodies. It doesn't mean that they're not male or female. It just is like, you know, helpful to imagine that there's just beautiful variance along the way and in the way that those bodies can be.
And can you tell us about some of the ways Intersex Aotearoa is celebrating and raising awareness about our intersex community?
We are sharing a bunch of different resources. We've got today a discussion on Just the Facts Instagram Live at 12 o'clock, where we are launching a four-part video series called Insights, which is about sexual health and relationships and consent and community for intersex rangatahi. And I'm talking with the creator of that, AJ, who's an awesome, vivacious intersex person, about their journey and some of the motivations for us collaborating on this. And Just the Facts is like a sexual health service for young people. So it's about really filling a knowledge gap there, which is really cool. So it's the first of its kind in Aotearoa. And then tomorrow we're releasing just a bunch of like silly feel-good videos in which our great friend Hugo dressed up as a dinosaur and went around asking people how aware they were of 6 in the lead up to Intersex Awareness Day. And so, as you can imagine, there's lots of different people stumbling and doing their best to explain what intersex is and a bunch of other questions we throw at them. And so it's sort of a video to speak to the testament of the work ongoing and how we'd love to get people on our waka and get more awareness of what intersex means and how it shows up in across our whānau and across the motu.
Last year, you were calling for visibility on issues faced by the intersex community, including outdated medical practices being used on people with variations in sex characteristics. So can you tell us a bit about any progress that has been made on that?
Yeah, so last year, Labor announced a $2.5 million budget allowance to a bunch of different outcomes for intersex rights-based healthcare. And so we've just seen that manifest into a procurement phase. So basically, you know, those services, the funding is ready for them and people can apply for that. So those services will be four things. So there's work that will happen on best practice guidelines for the healthcare sector, for whānau and young people with intersex variation, so making sure that practitioners have the best practice available and understand what that could look like. And another is the creation of training for healthcare professionals, so that making sure that they actually understand how to be like culturally competent, culturally aware and culturally safe for anyone with a variation of sex characteristics. And there's a lot of work to do there, so we're really excited about that training. And then there's going to be a national peer support service, which is really exciting, the first of its kind in Aotearoa, so looking at developing services so that anyone with a variation of sex characteristics and their whānau, specifically looking at young people, but I know that it will better the sort of broader demographic, can reach out and find connection with people who have had similar experiences to them and get a sort of community connection that it's so needed when you've been isolated often for so long. And then finally, there's going to be budget set aside for the creation of resources that will kind of speak to the lack of awareness across Aotearoa and support the movement gaining traction so that all of us can come along on this journey of understanding why it's important that intersex people have dignity, respect and excellent healthcare.
Finally, how can Aotearoa continue to support intersex people?
Oh, such a great question. So people can continue to do better for their intersex homies by doing their research, jump online, read as much as you can about what intersex is. Often people conflate it with trans or gender identity. It's not. Obviously, everyone has a gender identity, so if you've got an intersex variation or not, you get to decide what that is. But that difference is really important, so really understanding what it means to have an intersex variation and also what some of the challenges we face are is key. But also, find some of those feel-good stories, because intersex joy is also important. We want to celebrate the fact that if we talk about how awesome human diversity is, that means we can also challenge all these other things that suck, like transphobia and racism, you know, things that tell all of us that bodies are meant to be a particular way. And we can say, hell no, that diverse bodies are beautiful no matter how they come.
And just quickly, if people want to get involved this week, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can get involved by a bunch of different things. We've got a campaign at the moment where if you download from our Intersex Awareness Day page on our website, you can download a bunch of social media and share it on your like your cover photo on your Facebook, or even use our Zoom background if you're in Hui all day, or share our Instagram post. And then take a screenshot, email it to us and go into the draw to win one of our amazing Fuck Normal t-shirts. You can do that, and that means that it's an excellent way of getting people to be like, hey, what's all this about? What is intersex? And then share with them our website, www.intersexaotearoa.org, and they can learn heaps more and download resources and check out all the different things that are happening this week.
That was Communications and Community Manager for Intersex Aotearoa, Jelly O'Shea, speaking about intersex community awareness in Aotearoa.
I'm Paddy Garin. This is the fucking news on The Wire.
And we'll be right back after this short break. Keep it on the B.
Ponsonby Social Club this week.
Ponsonby Social Club presents Asian Soundscapes, a month of Pan-Asian ecstasy, Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays in October.
The very best local Pan-Asian creatives are set to immerse you in a rich tapestry of Pan-Asian music, comedy and culinary delight.
Featuring Angela Dravid, Club Ruby, DJ Karen Tahir, Phoebe Rings, Ray Leslie, Scalper and heaps more.
Plus a special kitchen pop-up by Naaman and the Strawberry Pig.
Asian Soundscapes at the Ponsonby Social Club, Thursdays, Fridays and Saturdays this October. Tickets available from Under the Radar.
The original originator.
95. Go to 95bfm.com for show podcasts.
For old time's sake, yes or no, would you like to be leader of the National Party at some point?
No, I'm just focused on what I'm doing. I'm one of those people that do it day by day, job by job.
I'll save this clip and come back to it in 5 or 10 years. We'll see how it's aged.
The Wire.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Wire on 95BFM. Students living in University of Auckland halls of residence are facing rent increases of up to 8% by the start of next year. The cost of living at Waipāruru Hall is reportedly set to reach $510 a week by 2024, above the average market value for Central Auckland, the largest increase in rent rates for university accommodation nationwide. Otto spoke to Matthew from Students for Fair Rent, a student-led organisation campaigning to lower accommodation costs at the university. Their petition to the university has received almost 1,500 signatures since it was launched in late August. Here is that interview.
What made you realize that University of Auckland accommodation costs were getting too high and that Students for Fair Rent needed to be formed?
Yeah, well, the whole campaign started off around 3 months ago, sort of random study sesh late at night, when my friend told me that the hall that we were living at, Waipāruru Hall, was going up to $510 next year. In comparison, I was paying $435 last year, and they're paying $470 this year. And I sort of did a bit of calculations and I look, well, it's way outstrips rate of inflation. And I just thought that completely absurd. Like, $435 was already a lot for me. $510 is just far too much for any first year student to ever have to afford. And so that's why I thought something needed to happen because, you know, that's just not fair on anyone.
Yeah, and it's also above a market rate for Auckland Central, right?
Yeah, 100%. If you look at, I guess, because at Waipa or first year halls, you get your own individual room. It's definitely, even without food, because first year catered halls have food, it is still significantly above market rate.
Can you tell us a bit more about how the increased cost of living have personally affected students such as yourself at University of Auckland?
Yeah, look, students are here as students. They're full-time students. They're meant to be at the university studying. And the high cost of rent just means that student loan and or student allowance isn't enough to cover rent. That means that students are forced to, first of all, take out a massive amount of student debt, but also go off, take time out of studying just to work. We ran a survey a couple months ago just to get people's experiences with high rent. And a lot of them said that they have to work 10, 20, some even 30 hours just to pay for rent and utilities. That's just crazy. That means that they're not studying at all. And a lot of them have said that, you know, the high rent and having to work means that their studies, their grades have significantly dropped. But there's nothing they can do because they have to pay to afford to live. And they have to get a degree because, you know, that's the way that they, you know, the society expects them to be. And it's just the university is not giving them a way out at all.
Would you say that your own studies have been affected by, you know, having to work increased hours or maybe the stress of, like, rent increases as well?
Yeah, definitely the stress is a big part of it. It's not just the fact that we have to work and study at the same time. It's just the mental side effects of it as well. Not to mention, you know, the physical health side effects as well, but definitely the mental side is, I think, one of the biggest issues with it, yeah.
Has there been any response from the university and university faculty towards Students for Fair Rent and the petition?
Yeah, well, we've sort of been in contact with the university in the past couple of months. The responses have been really disappointing so far. Their response has kind of been that, well, you know, things are getting more expensive. Well, we know things are getting more expensive. Rent has gone up significantly under your watch. And it's just absolutely absurd that they're using sort of inflation as a justification because, well, the inflation was 6.7% before. Now it's gone down to, what, 5.6%? And it's going to continue to go down. And the increase of 8% across every single hall is just completely unjustified.
Would you say that maybe you're not exactly happy with the outcomes of the discussions you may have had with university faculty then?
Yeah, absolutely not. It just the response they have is just so out of touch and just clearly signals how much they don't care about their students. And the other thing is we gave in our petition last week, and we gave them a deadline of yesterday to respond to our petition. They've yet to actually have any sort of formal response to the petition yet. So that's actually pretty disappointing that they haven't taken the initiative to respond to our campaign and to our petition. But what our expectation is hopefully in the coming few weeks, we'll enter into some sort of discussion and negotiation with them, with other relevant parties as well, just to talk about the issue and also find a middle ground and where we can fall.
Do you have any faith in the university to eventually do what it can to lower accommodation costs?
I don't know. It's not up to me to say whether or not the university will do anything, but what I will say is the university has a moral right to provide safe, secure, and affordable accommodation to its students. Right now, they're not doing it. The other thing is student accommodation is completely unregulated under the Residential Tenancy Act. Actually, under Section 5B, student accommodation is completely excluded from that, which means that there's no regulation. Students can't go to the residence tribunal or anything, which means that students are essentially not protected at all. And so, you know, it is up to the university to uphold its moral right or moral responsibility, rather. But it's also up to government and parliament to actually put in those safeguards for students.
With the general elections having happened quite recently, what impact do you think that the changing government will have on student living costs?
Through the election, we've worked quite closely with all the Auckland Central candidates, and that is from politicians from each of the party, I will say, with the exception of the ACT Party. But All of the individual candidates themselves have been very supportive, actually overwhelmingly supportive of our campaign. All of them have recognised the need for something to be done. With their parties, however, honestly, I am quite disappointed to say that none of the major parties actually have any policies directed towards renters, and specifically student renters. And so with the change of government, and sorry, don't quote me on this, but really disappointing that we have a government that doesn't actually care about students or renters.
Do you have any specific calls to the new government that you'd like to make when it comes to addressing living costs for students?
What I'll say is students are among the most susceptible to the cost of living crisis. If the new government truly cared about the cost of living crisis, then they would look at how students feel and look at how the cost of living is impacting students themselves. And to do that, they'll have to address the high rent, and to do that, they'll have to address Section 5B of the RTA, and that is the right thing for the government to do and the new parliament to do is to repeal Section 5B of the RTA.
Okay, we're coming up towards the end of the interview. Is there anything else that you'd like to add or kind of finish off with?
Yeah, actually, another issue that I'd really like to talk about is the thing with RA office. So resident advisors are part-time workers at the university, but honestly, they are full-time caretakers of their residents. So the offers for 2024 have come out, and it's really disappointing to hear that the sort of historical 25% rent reduction has been completely scrapped next year. This means that RAs not only have to pay full rent to live at their workplace, but they're also subject to horrible mismanagement. And also, actually under the new offer as well, their guaranteed minimum hours is essentially halved. So essentially the university is asking their own employees to work a second job just to afford to live where they have to work. And that's just completely absurd.
That was Matthew from Students for Fair Rent, a student-led group campaigning to lower accommodation costs for University of Auckland halls of residence.
The Wire.
I don't know, and frankly the whole thing gives me the heebie-jeebies.
The Wire.
Surf Life Saving New Zealand has been operating for over 100 years. They make sure beaches are safe to swim at. They recently issued tips on how to stay safe this summer, which is predicted to be long and hot, perfect swimming weather. To start our interview, I asked Surf Life Saving New Zealand CEO Steve Fisher to tell us a bit more about Surf Life Saving New Zealand.
So we've been around for over 110 years. We started down in the Wellington region, and we've been saving lives ever since. And we now have 74 clubs throughout the country, and we operate on about 92 beaches each year.
I understand you've never had a drowning between the flags. Why is that?
Well, yeah, it's a common saying to swim between the flags. It's still the best way to ensure that everyone enjoys their time in the water safely. So surf lifeguards are very experienced, and they choose the best part of the beach to set up the flags. And, of course, that's where they focus a lot of their attention during the course of any given day. We increasingly have patrols that, of course, go up and down the beach in various vehicles, whether that's IRBs or on the four-wheel drives. But the flags is always the safest way to ensure you enjoy your day at the beach.
What is the Indian Ocean Dipole, and what does it mean for the temperature and length of this summer?
What I do know is that we have got confirmed and established El Nino pattern in New Zealand this year. And that's likely to mean a long, hot summer in northern parts of the country and quite high winds.
Why and how is it important for people to learn how to float?
Well, float's a basic thing to do. If you ever find yourself in trouble, it's a way that you can stay safe and you can conserve energy. And then if you can raise your hand and signal to the lifeguards or to those on shore as well, it's like the most basic thing you can do to ensure if you get into trouble, you can look after yourself and signal to others for help.
How can Kiwis find the safest place to swim?
Yeah, so remember, if you're heading to the beach, it's always a good idea to check out a website, www.safeswim.org.nz, and that way you can find out where the lifeguarded beaches are and ensure you can always therefore swim between the red and the yellow flags, which is always the safest place to swim.
Your guidelines say, if in doubt, stay out. Why is this?
Yeah, that's right. It's basically, look, obviously the water in the beach is an unpredictable environment, right? So waves can be bigger than they look. There are dangerous rip currents, which can be really hard to spot if you're uninitiated, and weather conditions can be unpredictable. So listen to your gut, really. If you're not a confident swimmer, or if you feel uncomfortable at all about the conditions, then it's pretty simple. If in doubt, stay out.
How can we keep children safe in the water?
Well, look, there's a couple of things there, right? I think you should always keep children within arm's reach if you're in or near the water. Waves can very quickly and unexpectedly knock kids off their feet and sweep them away. So absolutely keep them with arm's reach and always keep a close eye on them when they're in the water.
What should you do if you see someone in trouble in the water?
Yeah, so like if you're in trouble and the surf lifeguards are in patrol, you need to let them know. And the simplest way to do that is to raise your hand or to wave your hands if you can. If you don't see any lifeguards and you see someone else in trouble, then the quickest thing you should do is call 111 and ask for the police. So the police and ourselves have a direct line to each other and we can always coordinate others who can help. So, you know, if you're in the water yourself and in trouble, signal for help. If you see someone else signaling for help, contact lifeguards. If not, call 111.
Finally, can you give a summary of tips to help Kiwis stay safe in the water this summer?
Look, always, you know, if you're heading to the beach, the number one thing is check out www.safeswim.org.nz, because that's going to show you where the lifeguarded beaches are in your area. And that will enable you to swim between the red and yellow flags, which always show the safest place to swim on any beach.
That was Steve Fisher, CEO of Surf Life Saving New Zealand, giving us some tips on how to stay safe at the beach this summer.
That was The Wire.
Ko ere te hōtaka katoa mō tēne wiki, ne te mihi ki a koutou katoa I kōrero mai ki o mō tēne rā. That is a wrap on The Wire for Rapa Wednesday. Thanks to everyone who spoke with us today. Green Party co-leader James Shaw, Communications and Community Manager for Intersex Aotearoa, Jelly O'Shea, James Mitchell from Stats NZ, Jeremy Neave from the Wellington City Mission, Steve Fisher from Surf Life Saving New Zealand, and Matthew from Students for Fair Rent. Ni rā hoki te mihi ki a koutou I whakarongo ana. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to 95BFM. Next up is the 1-4 with Bridge.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.